For many years, I've listened to violinist friends saying things like, "Oh, have you heard so-and-so since he got his new Strad or Guarnerius or whatever it is? You can tell the difference immediately, can't you?" Well, very often I couldn't. And I began to suspect that, without prior knowledge, most violinists wouldn't be able to tell the difference between one fiddle and another. So this experiment you're about to hear is to see whether a panel of two famous violinists and a celebrated violin dealer could actually tell the difference. Or would they think that a 1975 fiddle made by a former shoemaker in England was a famous make? Would they dig graves for themselves and fall into them, as I rather wickedly hoped they would? So here is what happened one day in the concert hall of Broadcasting House in London. We have four violins in the concert hall of Broadcasting House, and we have a division down the middle of the stage. Behind the screen is the violinist Manu Farikyan, and he's going to play these four violins one after the other, and he's going to let you hear the sound and tone of these different instruments. He's going to try and play the same way on each violin, but naturally, as an artist, he's going to do what any good violinist would do, supposing that any of these violins were his own. He's going to make the music sound as well as possible. The two test phrases he chose are well known, the opening of the Bruch G minor concerto and the first few bars of the Bach Chaconne. The Bruch goes up and down the fiddle in a single line. The Bach, of course, is chordal. Now, on this side of the screen, we can't see Manu Farikyan. He can't see us. And we have two world-famous violinists, Isaac Stern and Pinkas Zuckermann, and we have also Charles Beer of the celebrated London firm of luthiers, who have supplied stringed instruments to amateur and professional musicians for 85 years, Charles?
Yes, about that.
There's absolutely no cheating going on here in the studio. You, listening at home, have almost the same information as we have in the studio. So I'll tell you about these four violins that you're going to hear. One is a Stradivarius, one is a Guarnerius, one is a French instrument, just over 100 years old, and one is a brand new instrument made by Ron Prale. It's nearly a year old. I thought it would be interesting to see if these three experts here in the studio can tell which violin is which. I'm going to ask Manu Farikyan now to play those little phrases of Bruch and Bach on what we'll call now instrument number one. And we're all going to write down in the studio on a piece of paper which instrument we think is which. So why don't you do the same? So here is instrument number one. Here's number two. Here's number three.
And here's number four. Very much. Now we'll have a little pause while Manu Parikyan puts the fiddles away and comes to join us.
It's awfully difficult to sit here and sort out a particular tone quality.
Yes, but nevertheless, I think it would be very interesting for musicians and the lay public, especially when prices are so enormous for the famous violin, to see if the tone quality and of an instrument is that easy to determine. It's not so much an examination for you gentlemen as an interesting experiment to see whether one can immediately tell which is the new instrument, which is the instrument 140, 130 years old, and which are the two classics. That was my reason in convening this. Okay?
Great.
So, just to show you that I'm quite prepared to throw myself in first, I thought the first one was the Villon, the second one I would say was the Guarnerius, the third the Strad, and the fourth the new one, 1975. Now I'm sure you'll all prove me wrong. Pinky,
I thought the first was the Guarneri, the second was the Prale, the third was the Strad, and the fourth was the Villon.
Charles?
I thought the first was the Guarneri. I thought the second and the third, I think they were the Vium and the Prale, but they might have been the Prale and the Vium. And I thought the fourth was the Strad.
Well, I thought the first was the Vium and the second was the Prale, and I wasn't very sure between the two until I'd listened to the others, and I'm still in doubt. I thought the third was the Guarneri and the fourth the Strad.
Well, it's interesting at any rate that there is some doubt. Manu.
The real truth.
The truth, yes. And this is well, the first was the Vium. The second was the Guarneri, third was the Prale, and fourth was the Strad.
Well, I got two out of four. I missed your...
Pinky, I'm sorry, I missed your fiddle. It's the only one I missed. Why is it that the classic violins are so much sought after? What do they give a violinist?
Security. Absolutely.
You mean it's easier
security
to work?
No, it means that you know... First of all, it takes a long time to find the one that you want to marry. And it means becoming accustomed to whatever that violin can do. Whatever you begin to know how far your demands can go. And what you look for, obviously, is the violin that responds the most to whatever you ask of it. These are the ones that are prized. These are the ones that one searches for. These are the ones that we all talk about to each other. With all the other instruments, even well-known ones, even Strads and Guarneris, there are always a weakness here or a certain quality of tone there and so on. You ask, what does a fiddle want? What do you need in a fiddle? Well, in the first place, it has to have a depth of sound. What we try to find an instrument is one that does not have a cutting edge, whose force is not limited, but whose tone is focused. Now, there's some fiddles that have a very tubby, rich sound that sounds nice in the room, sounds nice under here, but it doesn't focus. It does not travel the same way that a great singer's voice must be focused from the diaphragm to travel. So must the sound of the violin. But the violin itself must have a sound that cuts through at a distance, and all that's left is the purity of the sound by the time the impurities drop about 10 feet from the front of the stage.
So the fact that you have an instrument which is known to be a Strad is not necessarily mean that it is of the very highest quality.
Absolutely true.
Stradivari died nearly 250 years ago, and each of his instruments has had a completely different life story, and some have been practically gone under steamrollers, and others have survived completely intact. And I think the condition in which they've come down to us affects the sound. And I also think that adjustment has a lot to do with it. There's a sort of final adjustment that the modern violin repairer is asked to do for an instrument, and this again will affect such things as the response and so on, the character.
Strings as well, different string and different instruments, different players.
So in fact we never hear really a single instrument of the classic period in the state in which it emerged from its work.
The sound was completely different. It was a more hollow quality.
The pitch was different, don't forget.
Very nice and very acceptable and not as big. It wouldn't... It's not a sort of sound.
The demands on the instrument are very different through the years. After all, Beethoven, Brahms, and so on, Stravinsky, the new sounds we have today. And over the years, people have developed new strings, new bows, new... it's a funny thing, but the Mozart bow, for example, Charles has a few old sticks. He thinks it's a tour. It's a very old... When was that? It made around 17...
It's about 17... Well, right when the violin concertos were written. And in the 1770s.
That bow on today's fiddle sounds the best I've ever heard, except you can't play Tchaikovsky or Brahms with it because it's just not strong enough. But Mozart and Bach sounds marvelous because you can go right into the string without the instrument choking on you.
But it gets back to... the interesting thing is that you talk about the change in the music, absolutely, and the change in the styles of playing. And still, it's the instruments that were made 250, 350 years ago that our friends here, the modern players, they find them the best. I don't think that they necessarily have to. I think, with due respect to Mr. Prale here, who's won a prize and his instrument sounds extremely well, I think it should be possible to make a new instrument that compares in some way, but I think really the craft of violin making enjoyed a sort of peak in the old days, which we don't really understand now. I think possibly the art has declined a little bit, if you like.
And there's no question that those instruments sound better now than when they were first produced. They have sounded marvellous throughout their lives.
They've sounded marvellous throughout their lives, and there is documentary evidence that a Stradivari, for instance, made, I think, in the 1690s, was acclaimed for its tone compared with instruments which were already 100 years old at that point.
You struck a very important point here, Mr. Amos. One of the problems of the newer violins is how the violin itself will live 20 years from now. And we have enough evidence to know that some very good sounding violins tend to sort of dissipate their qualities within a certain length of time. This may have to do with the varnish, which is completely uncopyable, even with the greatest of modern technique in chemical analysis. We have no idea exactly how the varnish was put on. We do know that the varnish has filled the pores of the wood and kept the wood alive through all these 200 and some 40, 50 years. And it's done it in such a way that the wood continues to vibrate in this wonderful fashion, set the whole tone column up, the air pushing out, in a very special way. This is a very complicated question you're asking. You're asking only about the very best violins, and there are not that many. I would rather see some of the young players playing a good, healthy, new violin than some of the intermediate instruments of various makers, and even a broken-up copy, or a broken, even an original one, but a bad Strad and a bad Guarneri is simply a bad violin. It unfortunately has a certain market value, because there are people who do nothing but buy and sell. They don't care about the instruments. And we all have been in contact with that, and there's a wide market for it. But as far as the player is concerned, for anybody listening to this program who is a young aspirant, do not be guided until you are well aware of how a violin should sound and what you should have, until you can both know about it and afford it. And it's much better to play a good, healthy, new violin for many years until you can know what you can get, what you're going to be able to get in the future years.
Charles, are there any well-known violinists who do in fact play on modern instruments or...
There have been a number of vogues in recent years, and a lot of violinists have invested in brand new instruments. I think sometimes they've mistakenly hoped that an instrument that was brand new and sounded marvellous was going to sound even better in 6 months or a year or 2 years,
and been disappointed, because as the varnish on the new instrument has dried out, so too has the tone quality. Mm. I think this has happened a lot. The people who've flirted with modern instruments and gone back to the classical ones. I may be doing modern makers an injustice, but I can't think of a top rank player at the moment who uses an instrument made in the last 20 years for choice. Mm.
Do you ever use newer instruments? I mean, for example, if you have to do a tour of Manila and Philippines or somewhere where it's incredibly hot and the thing might melt a bit.
I don't know. I can't speak for anybody else. I don't.
You play
I think choirs. I think if people have asked me to come, they deserve to get the best I can offer.
Right.
And I have to take care of the instrument. Mm. That means that you see to it that you every once in a while you get into a climate like that, you let the fiddle breathe air-conditioned air for one night. It has to breathe like any other very, very carefully balanced object. There are new instruments, some which have lasted a little while, that for instance, some of the Philadelphia Orchestra men play some very good instruments that are made around there, and they're not too bad. They do not have that last patina of the great instruments. Nobody pretends that at any time.
I think they will have it less and less.
That's very possible. But for the price that they cost, it's not that expensive. And it is a healthier instrument to work into. But they give... My reason for saying what I said before was that for a young player, I don't know whether Manu would agree with this, but for a young player, I would rather see an instrument that can take the beating that a young player has to give it and can dig in rather than having
a middle-rank
instrument that says, go no, this far and no further, don't touch me.
That's exactly what I would advise too.
Sure.
Is there a great deal of controversy amongst the top players as to whether the Guarnerius or the Striatus is better? Manuk?
You're treading on very dangerous ground here, because I'm in a terrible minority. I'm surrounded by these two great artists who absolutely believe that the Guarneri is the utmost in violins. But as Charles has said, one can only point to their colleagues who play on Strats. Milstein plays on the Strat. Menuhin's Swell is a very great instrument, I think. Oistrakh played on a very fine Strat.
There's another factor here. When one gets nervous, the nerves are subjected on stage. Again, it depends very much what the chemical reaction of the player under those circumstances is towards the instrument he's playing at the moment. At least for me, I found that when I get nervous, it's much harder to put the right arm on the string, and therefore, if I can have a little bit more of a cushion, which the Guarneri gives me, then I'm happier to play on that one on stage under those circumstances. On a Strat, I feel I'm playing somewhere up on the second floor and I'm treading on very thin ground, and if I put my hand down, it's going to go...
Pinky, if I may say so, you must have tried the wrong Strat.
One of the problems, even worse than violin, are the bows. Bows are getting much harder to find than violins. And a bow is even more personal a choice for the player. It has to fit his hand, his arm, his weight, the way he plays, even more than a violin, and it can change the sound of a violin. I can play with six different bows in my case, and you'll think I'm playing six different fiddles. There's a sound that you need for Brahms and a sound you need for Mozart, and they're not the same. Mm. And every bow has a personality. Then there are fiddles that are going to become the well-known fiddle simply by attrition of the major ones. There are makers like Bergonzi and Guadagnini, a couple of others.
And the later 19th century, the early 19th century, Italian makers are wonderful. I played on a Presenda the other day, which was magnificent. Mind you, I've played on bad Presendas too, but this was an outstanding
violin. There can
absolutely
be some
wonderful.
Good ones.
One last question. Is there any modification of design possible? I mean, if people get more experience nowadays of making instruments, is there anything in the idea of new kind of violin making in any way?
Well, let's first make one as good as the old ones. My feeling is the further away one gets from the principles that were used 250 years ago, the worse.
Well, thank you very much, all of you, for coming along. And
we hope your listeners are as pleasantly confused as we are.
Well, a very pleasant confusion it all was, and I think it was rather sporting of Isaac Stern, Pinkus Zuckerman and Charles Beer to be confused for us. Manu Perikian it was who was playing the instruments, and I only wish you could have seen the face of the old violin maker Ron Prale sitting in the concert hall quietly as the famous violinist mistook his 1975 violin for a famous Italian instrument.